thank you all. Thank you, Paul and Rosie. And thank you to Ovail for 610 of these. It's astonishing. That's worth a round of applause on its own. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you as well to my dear friend Phil Metris, who you'll hear from in just a few moments, depending on how long I can stay up here, who is responsible for me being along with him on this trip in the first place. And thank you to all of you. It's a pleasure not only to have the chance to share the stage with you and to read to you, but also just to get a peek into what a poetry community looks like here in Cork. Thank you for that. As you heard, I'm the poet laureate of the state of Ohio, which I realize might not mean much to you here, but don't worry, it means absolutely nothing to the state of Ohio too. So we're going to be in the same boat here. Before I read, let me just check in and see. In Ireland, what is the etiquette for what the audience does in between poems? This isn't, because in the States we either are just silent and contemptuous. Or sometimes we snap, which I hate, or sometimes audiences...
We order drinks, dude.
So I've come to the right place. Okay. I tend to think that the best thing to do in between poems is to allow for sort of a dramatic silence and then to make this sound. Because that confirms to the people around you that you are deep and thoughtful, and you get the poems in ways that no one else could. So I'd like to read some poems that are about the place where I'm from, and a few that I hope get a bit closer to the places where some of you might be from. This is called Midwestern Cities. You Midwestern cities, you threadbare capitals, lost satellites, will your outskirts never end? Will your suburbs run each other through? And your accents bleed into a slang of silk and husk. Dawn is slipping across the chain-smoking factories of Pittsburgh and Cleveland, where the third shift sleeps off its Yingling, where pierogi boil and stanch. Wake, Detroit, the morning molts over 10 Mile. Rise, parched Indianapolis. Rise, great skyscraping Chicago. The odors of your millions soap the L. Cincinnati, St. Louis, Milwaukee, Minneapolis, your waters run on. Your congregations hymn. The billboards declare the second coming could come at any second. From anywhere, Akron or Grand Rapids. From Gary, Kenosha, Duluth. Thank you. Sorry about the pun. I know some of those sound a bit sarcastic, which probably means you're doing it right, but nevertheless,
they actually forgot and they just went.
Eight years ago, I was in Ireland for the first time, and my wife and I went on a bit of a Yeats pilgrimage to Sligo, and made it into a pub there with maybe the best pub name I've ever heard, Shoot the Crows.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and I knew this had to be the title of a poem, and I don't know if I get the place right, but I tried. This is called Shoot the Crows. In such a place, you fill the warm dark with stout and talk. You can speak someone else's English, name names, but yourself stay anonymous. Who knows what promises were promised here? Do theirs, like ours, gutter among all the old songs and outlawed smoke hanging in the air? In such a dark, you can see only so far. You cannot know. I know the night settles like a steady pour. A night like this, in which I wish I could go back to talk in a dark that holds us close and says our names. So unlike this night, in which I raise this toast to you, those nameless friends who took us in, and this to you, who did not take my name. You're gonna give me a compliment. I know, it's my fault. It's my fault you're gonna give me a compliment.
It's a sense of humor.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
It's not his first time.
Okay.
Don't get upset.
I'll take it over. I'll take it over dead silence where then I just think like, oh shit, this is okay. This is a poem called Aaron. Wherever you walk on this island, you strike stone. The erratics and karsts of the storm beach left here 100 million years. They have cleared what they could, blocked them up into walls, and built a fortress over clints and grikes. Seems all green grows thorny here at edges and the edges' edges. That salt air tips the thistles and the stones put down roots. The whole world is a shrine, I want to say, and marked with stones, though it is not true. Nor is it a grave. It may be there is no whole world at all, only an island in troubled seas, or only what I know of it is hard as stone, but soluble in water.
Woo!
One of the things that strikes me as remarkable just about I guess, geology or just living in the world at all is that that place, Inishmore, shares some plant life with Lake Erie, where I'm from, and that's because of the ways that the changes over the earth have taken place in time, that we have some plants on that shore that used to be indigenous to the Atlantic coast. And this is a poem about some of those plants, one of those called the beach pea, which is not a very beautiful flower, but it's a tough one, and that's what I like about it. This is called beach pea. Leave beauty to the rose and its lexicon of crimsons. Oh, ruby petal and holy thorn, poets, you can have it. You, beach pea, rooted in sand when all this land was lake, when this lake was Atlantic coast, stranded when the glaciers calved and receded, leaving you in sea rocket, purple sandgrass and spurge. What genuine science, what skill in your flowering. You conjure nitrogen from thin air and hold it, hard as November wind in your roots. Deep in the sterile earth, they spread and keep what water they can. Hard scrabble, this scratch of beach offers nothing but swells of dry surf, break and wash of waves like the back and forth of xylem and phloem in your thin frame's tiny musculature. Pastel and crepe petal, flower of work and metal, spread out, spread deep. Bow to no one, to no rose.
I'm gonna get spoiled and used to the applause and then
I'm gonna go home to the States and show up to a reading and it'll be me and the bartender. And that'll be it. It won't be so bad, actually. There's a room in the art museum in Cleveland where I'm from that has all these lovely portraits of saints. And as a sort of lapsed Catholic, it was a room that I've always been drawn to. What strikes me about it is that in that room, so unlike other portraits in other museums in the world, where every subject of a portrait seems very keen to meet your gaze and very concerned with the fact that they are looking at you, looking at them. In these paintings, the saints seem to care not at all that you're there. And that's what makes me interested in them. So this poem is called Lives of the Saints. In all the paintings, they share the look of impatience, as if embarrassed by the rich oils, the stretched canvas in which their gaze is caught down to the pupil. Here, among the attributes of lion and wolf, the transverse cross, they suffer the interminable tyranny of this world, their eyes turned histrionically upward. This place, not the body barbed with arrows, is the martyrdom. The tallow burns low toward kingdom come. We have asked their intercession, not their pity. This is why we turn to portraiture and still life, where the bottle remains unemptied, the zest of an orange trails tenuously, but holds. Our absence is of no consequence to them. They have no taste for bread alone, and no ear for the songs that make us weep and hurt and joy.
Thank
A couple more in the sort of mythological sacred text vein. This one requires just a bit of audience participation. So does anybody know the end of this phrase? If you meet the Buddha...
on the road, kill him.
There it is. If you meet the Buddha on the road, kill him.
Huh?
Well, and as a, again, as a lapsed Catholic, yeah. As a lapsed Catholic, the idea of killing the object of your devotion both made sense to me and also did not make sense to me, which I think is supposed to be the paradox of how things work. But that phrase is so interesting to me, the idea that I wanted to try to write a poem to figure it out. I didn't figure it out, but I did write a poem. And so this poem is called, If You Meet the Buddha. Not kill him, as Lin Ji writes, but kill the illusion, as the Buddha is anything that distracts one from the Buddha within. These words, for instance, which both say and do not say, which point toward, not to. If I think I understand, I must not understand. The trouble with language is the language. Its lack, its want, its suffering, all the fire I have worshipped morning and evening. Every word is a desire to be extinguished. Kill is a metaphor, the Buddha a metaphor, one must carry across and carry beyond. Between the adjective and noun must be a thousand ways to suffer. Between this and that is a noble path, if you can walk it. If you meet the Buddha there, kill him. Not Buddha, but Buddha. Mm-hmm. Not kill, but kill. And then just because I, as a poet, I just think there's not enough poems about Icarus, and that we desperately were in need of at least one more. I'm going to read you this one, which takes its title from the famous Auden poem that is also not quite about Icarus. This poem is not quite about him, but it is called About Suffering. It's, by the way, it's also a real laugh riot, this one, so apologies in advance. This is the time to order that drink, by the way. About suffering. It's never Icarus. It's not that grand gesture of feather, wax, and atmosphere, and flux. It's less than that. It's lesser than. It doesn't happen in pentameter. Suffering, failure, agonies in gardens, but in the sideways speak of bureaucrats whose words, like these, disguise what they intend. Under soft, fluorescent suns of waiting rooms, physicians' consultations, where the lungs on the light box are spread out like wings. All this illumination just to show the dark spots slowly blotting out our names. Sadder than tragedy and silly, these cuts that bleed you dry. I mean you. You know as well as I, Icarus is not for us. He flies and falls, that's all. He doesn't joke to hide his fear, or seem ashamed, or wound lovers with rusted, jagged-edged words. He never sulks in tristesse after sex. He's young and proud. He likes the sound of his own voice. Of course the world must break and scatter him among the falling birds. It's never him. His father, Daedalus, he's our muse, bent to an unforgiving craft in someone else's labyrinth. The dark exile on which he sets himself to work, letting the candles gutter so the wax spills, seals vein and down at quill and shaft, working longer into the thankless night. He has worked feathers into these wings for years. He has slim hope, at best, that they will hold. Come daybreak, they will stand outside the gate and test the wind. For once he will be bold. At last he sleeps, in fits and half-dreamed fears that love and work and life are passing vapor, and all the wings he's made of paper. Has anybody been paying attention to the news?
Try not to.
Which one's the Irish?
Yeah, well,
international.
Because I feel like things are really going great.
That's the Disney
And this is a poem about how great everything is going. It's called Love Poem for an Apocalypse. And let me say, though, that I think this poem is funny. Most of the audiences to whom I've read it have disagreed with me about that. But you should feel free to laugh if the spirit so moves you, but just please make sure you laugh at the funny lines and not at the serious lines. Okay? Love Poem for an Apocalypse. I wish I'd met you after everything had burned, after the markets crash and global sea levels rise, the forests scorched, the grasslands trespassed. My love, it is a whole life's work to disappear. Ask the god with his head in the wolf's mouth, or the serpent intent on swallowing all the earth. Ask the Senate subcommittee for market solutions, for late capitalism and early onset dementia. You and a bird flu could make me believe in fate. I think we might be happy. Thank you, I think that one's funny too. I think we might be happy in the end, in the dark of a hollow tree, a seed bank or blast-proof bunker, if only you would sing the song I love, you know the one, about our precious eschatology, the one I always ask to hear to lull me back to sleep. And I'll read just one more poem, but first my thanks to all of you for listening, for sometimes clapping. That was really great. Thank you. I appreciate that. And really, although I know it might seem to you that it can't get any better than this, please stick around for a moment because wait a sec, because my friend Phil was rather terrific as well. So this is another poem that's a bit about the news, but I hope this one has a little bit more hope in it, and so that's why I'm reading it to you last. Thank you again. On a day I could not pray, the lilacs blossomed. In an hour when I believed in little but hurt, or the fear of hurt, they came. Their purple, impossible, then possible, then already there. Luscious and precious, and all the news be damned. I could not tell them this is no place for them, this life of hurt and the fear of hurt. I could not stop the robins bobbing among the branches, leaf forthcoming unto leaf. Despite it all, the air itself a psalm of lilac, the momentary, holy, I could not pray. For who would bless my fear? For who could keep my joy? Thank you all.